I want to talk about politics today. I want to emphasize that it is not the intent of this lesson to tell you how to vote. I want to emphasize that I'm an American. I'm a veteran. I love America. But the next 3 or 4 months are going to be political chaos. And we are seeing massive change in our country. There are negatives. There are perhaps positives. But Christians are faced with some unusual situations in this particular time, this particular election. You know, in Judges, the 17th chapter and in verse 6, we see a passage that tells us what happens when there is no government. That passage says, in those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. Everyone did what is right in his own eyes. By the way, we have some copies of the bulletin. I mailed it to everybody that's on our mailing list. If you would like a copy, we have some right here on the table. You can get it. So, I'm sorry?
Have them raise their hand.
If you'll raise your hand, Carl, we'll bring it to you. It has an outline of the sermon. And you can, and I hope you will, study these passages and see what we're talking about. Because I think this is a very, very, very important lesson. We as Christians are faced with some challenges. Deciding who to vote for. Deciding who's a promoter of, or at least the closest promoter to what God would have us do. It's a very important part of what we as Christians need to do. It's kind of interesting to go back and to look at the teachings of the first century church. In Romans, the 12th chapter, starting with verse 9, there's a discussion about what Christians should be doing, and that passage is very similar to the Sermon on the Mount. But then in the 13th chapter, starting with verse 1, Paul says to you and to me, and to the Christians of his day, I'm going to be reading verses 1 through 7, everyone must submit himself to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established. Wow. You realize that when Paul wrote that, the Roman government was in control? You talk about an abortion issue when someone had a baby they didn't want, they just threw it out in the street. Literally, that was happening. The government sanctioned it. There was violence. There was oppression. The authorities that exist have been established by God. Really? Verse 2. Consequently, he who rebels against the authority is a rebelling against what God has instituted. And those who do so will bring judgment on themselves. For rulers hold no terror for those who do right, but for those who do wrong. Do you want to be free from fear of one in authority? Then do what is right and he will commend you. Verse 4. For he is God's servant to do you good. But if you do wrong, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword for nothing. He is God's servant, an agent of wrath, to bring punishment on the wrongdoer. Therefore, it is necessary to submit to the authorities, not only because of possible punishment, but also because of conscience. This is why you pay taxes, for the authorities are God's servants, who give them full time to governing. Give everyone what you owe him. If you owe taxes, pay taxes. If revenue, then revenue. If respect, then respect. If honor, than honor. How can Paul say that? This is a corrupt government. This is a government which violated every concept of human dignity. And yet Paul says we need to be subject to civil authority. I have to say with that there is no command by Jesus or the apostles to get involved in politics. There is no condemnation of those who were in politics. And Jesus, when he dealt with Pilate, one of the most corrupt rulers that ever lived, in John 19, verse 11, when Jesus is having his discussion with Pilate, Jesus says to Pilate, "You would have no authority over me at all unless it had been given you from above." This was Pilate, a speaker for the pagan world. So how do we deal with this? How do we vote? I'm not telling you who to vote for. I'm saying how do we vote? There's some who say, "Well, I'm just not going to vote." Well, I understand that. But it's interesting that Jesus faced this challenge. If you've got a Bible with you, you might want to turn to Matthew, the 22nd chapter, starting with verse 17. Because there's an important principle in that passage that I want us to learn from this morning. And if you've listened to me over the years, you know I try to make one fundamental point that I think probably a lot of us don't understand every time I speak. And this is an example. The opponents of Christ said to Christ, "Is it lawful to pay taxes?" Well, that sounds innocent enough. But Jesus says, "Why do you put me to the test?" Really? How can this be a test? Well, think about it for a minute. If he says, "No, you shouldn't pay taxes," he just defied Caesar. And the government will arrest him. If he says, "Yes, you should pay taxes," then you have violated one of the principles of the Moses law. Because the Jews were not to pay taxes to civil magistrates, to civil governments. And the taxes we read about them paying in the scripture most of the time was to support the temple. So Jesus is being tested. He's between a rock and a hard place. But listen to what he says. This is Matthew 22 and verse 21. "Render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's." Render to Caesar the thing that are Caesar's. What's that? That's the physical world. That's the physical existence. That passage we read a few minutes ago from Romans 13 is talking about civil law, about obedience, about doing things that are good instead of being destructive. And render to God's the things that are God's. And what are the things that are God's? They're the spiritual. Jesus is telling them, and he's telling us, you've got to separate the physical from the spiritual. You know, it's interesting if you keep reading that chapter in Matthew 22. The next question they ask you is, okay, we got this woman that had seven husbands. They all died. Boy, she must have been a pretty rough wife. I don't know how you get seven wives, but anyway. And the question they asked was, well, whose wife will she be in the resurrection? And Jesus says, you don't understand. Because in the resurrection, we will be like angels. No marriage. No physical relationship. The concept of separating the physical from the spiritual is critical to our survival as Christians in the age in which we live. You know, this whole question of Black Lives Matter has an interesting history. Because when slaves were brought to America, the justification given for it was that black people were not human. They were just a highly evolved ape, but still an ape. And so the justification of enslaving was based upon the physical. And it was important to understand that when people began to understand the color of skin does not define whether you're a human or not, and that's biblical, then it began to change. But it has still been a long, hard route, and we are not there yet. One of my favorite stories, I was in a program with Marshall Keeble years ago. Marshall Keeble is a very well-known black evangelist. And I've told you some of the stories I've had with some of these guys. Jack Evans and myself have had some really interesting stories. Marshall Keeble and I were in a lectureship, and there was a guy that was attacking Marshall Keeble because he was just a black ape, quote unquote. And Marshall quoted the passage that said, go preach the gospel to every creature. And he said to this guy, are you denying I'm a creature? We had a good time with that. And yet it's tragic to understand there are people that still think that way. We must separate the physical from the spiritual. So don't expect the church to be telling you how to vote. Don't expect us to be entering into the political debate. Whether you're a Democrat or a Republican or a Dixiecrat or an independent or whatever is irrelevant, because those are physical descriptions, not spiritual ones. And the spiritual ones have a profound effect upon how we love and how we treat one another. So what is our response to politics as Christians? The first point that I want to make to you is so important, and it's perhaps most profoundly given in Ephesians 6 and in verse 12. And listen to what this passage says. Put on the full armor of God, so that you can take your stand against the devil's schemes. For our struggle, this is you and me, this is the Christian response. Our struggle is not against flesh and blood. See, as a Christian, I'm not concerned in a spiritual way with who's running for office. And what the church needs to deal with is not taxes or the physical requirements of the law. And we cannot physically get involved in that kind of discussion. Our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, against spiritual forces of evil in heavenly realms. See, that's our battle. That's where you and I need to be. That's why we're doing the highway cleanup. That's why we're doing the food pantry. It's not primarily because we're trying to relieve the dirty highway or people that need food. Yes, those are physical spin-offs of what we do. But it's because we're trying to carry a spiritual message to the people around us and make a difference in the lives of men and women. So the passage goes on and says in verse 13, "Therefore, put on the full armor of God, so that when the day of evil comes, you may be able to stand your ground." And so what does it describe as the armor of God? Physical armor? Physical helmet? Read the passage. Look at the concept of what a breastplate of righteousness means. About having feet ready to do the work of the Lord. Our battle is against spiritual matters. In Titus, the third chapter, in verse 1, Paul, addressing the church, says, "Remind them," the Christians, "to be submissive to rulers and authorities. Be obedient. Be ready to do every good work. Speak evil of no one. Avoid quarreling. Be gentle. And show perfect courtesy toward all people." What are those things? Those are spin-offs of our spiritual nature. If I consider you to be a human being, created in the image of God, then your spiritual makeup is what I'm primarily concerned about. We're not concerned about numbers. We're not concerned about trying to do things that will build us a big fancy building. We're concerned about showing courtesy to all people. And remember that God is still working. Back in Acts, the fifth chapter, starting with verse 33, there was a guy named Gamaliel. When people were going to try and kill Paul, and Gamaliel said, and this is a wonderful statement, "Let them alone. If they are from God, you can't overthrow them. And if it is of human origin, it will fall." Do we have politicians that are incapable? Sure we do. Just like we got preachers that are incapable and school teachers that are incapable. But what will happen? Anything of human nature will fall. If it is from God, it will triumph. And God uses civil authority. Do you remember what happened to Paul when he was being attacked in Acts, the 23rd chapter? There were some people that had sworn to kill him. So how did he avoid these people who were militantly against him in a physical way? Well, he informed the Roman government, this pagan government that did so many horrible things. And what happened, according to that passage, this is Acts 23, starting with verse 23, he was sent to Felix. So they're going to kill him on the way. Oh, yeah? Read what the government sent with him. 200 soldiers, 70 horsemen, 200 spearmen, and a horse to ride. See, God uses government. And let me say to you that not all political leaders are corrupt or bad. In Scripture, we read about some good guys. In Luke 7, verse 3, there was a centurion. And the Jews came to Jesus and said, "Will you help this guy? He's a good guy. He built us a synagogue." This was a good ruler. Jesus said when he came to know this man in verse 9, "Not even in Israel have I found such faith." In Acts, the 10th chapter, we read about Cornelius. Now, I don't know whether you realize it or not, but the Bible tells us that Cornelius, in chapter 10 and verse 1, was a centurion of the Italian band. Do you know, secular history tells us this was one of the most esteemed groups of the Roman government. They were well known for their efficiency and their capability. And so who was Cornelius? He was a centurion, a ruler of 100 within this group. And you know the story of how his relationship with Peter opened the door to the Gentiles. In John 3, beginning with verse 1, we read about Nicodemus, a ruler of the Jews. In John, the 19th chapter, in verse 39, this same man brought burial spices, 100 pounds of burial spices, to bury Christ. In Luke 23, beginning with verse 50, Joseph of Arimathea took the body of Jesus down from the cross. By the way, have Church of Christ members, have Christians ever become effective in politics? Do you know who James A. Garfield was? He was an elder in the Church of Christ. And he was the 20th president from 1881, March the 4th, to September the 19th. He was an abolitionist because of his Christian beliefs. His spiritual makeup enabled him to be so well liked that he did not aspire to the presidency, but was drafted to be president. By the way, he was assassinated because of his beliefs that all men are equal. So what's our conclusion? Number one, separate the spiritual from the physical. As I said to you at the start, I'm a veteran. I'm an American. I love this country. I'm deeply concerned with what has happened, the way that people have not been treated well in this country, even though we claim to have done that. But I have to separate my convictions as a Christian from my identity as a physical ruler of the law. I need to honor and obey the law. I need to be a good citizen. I need to use the law correctly. We've been very careful to not do anything with our property that was in violation of civil law, because that's the physical. We don't need that building. As a matter of fact, I really kind of enjoy being out here. Especially when the Lord provides the air conditioning. That breeze is a welcome. So you need to vote. I don't care who you vote for, but you need to vote. You need to understand the physical. But the church is going to deal with the spiritual, and we cannot get involved in politics or in the struggles that are going on to try and reform America. Our spiritual makeup, however, will reflect our love and our concern and our support for all men, all women, all children. So vote, but don't make it part of the church. Obey the law. You say, well, what if the law is in contradiction to God's will? Then we need to obey God's will, but remember what Gamaliel said? If it's a human law, it will self-destruct. And I'm well aware that there are laws in place right now that conflict with the value that God has placed upon us as Christians. But our concern needs to be to teach, to live, to support. And so we're involved with people that maybe have gotten into trouble because of the way they have chosen to live. But we can help them spiritually and change them. And that's how Jesus did it. That's how the apostles did it. That's what our method of operation has to be. Titus 3 and verse 1. remind them. That's you, that's me. To be submissive to rulers and authorities, to be obedient, to be ready for every good work. This congregation has stood out in the area because we have jumped on every single opportunity we've had to serve our fellow human beings, to radiate to people that we care about them and that we want the best for them, and we must continue that. To speak evil of no one, to avoid quarreling, to be gentle, to show perfect courtesy towards all people. Brothers and sisters, that's the word of Paul to Titus, and it is carried to us. And what's the ultimate result of this? The ultimate result is to know that the spiritual is the one thing that will last eternally. When Jesus spoke about rendering to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, to God the things that are God's, one of the primary things that he has given us is the realization that our spiritual makeup and following the teachings of Christ will take us to eternity. So what is your relationship? As we sit here under the trees, as we see what's around us, as we read the newspapers, we see political chaos all around us, it is still well with our soul. Because our soul is connected to God in a spiritual way. And whatever happens to this physical world, we can have a relationship with God which enables us to survive in a lost and a dying world. As we sing number 345, let me encourage you to think about the words of this song. And if you have a need you want to bring to us, please do that, and we would be considering it an honor to pray with you, to be of help to you in any way that we can. We are concerned about your soul and about your spiritual well-being as well as our own. Let's stand together and sing, "It is well with my soul."